From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. On Sunday, people across the world are marking 100 years since the armistice that ended World War I in 1918. On 11/11 at 11 a.m. in your own time zone, you're invited to ring bells or wind chimes or church steeples in the town square or improvise any instrument or mobile phone app to mark that. And we will be commemorating that and Veterans Day Monday on our show. We're going to be learning about what was known as the war to end all wars affected the lives and people of Georgia and the South, and explore a whole new field of research into how African Americans, so often left out of official histories, were impacted. So make sure and join us for that on Monday, or you can listen on your own time from gpbnews.org and our app. If you haven't seen the latest episode of The Walking Dead, we're going to warn you, this may contain spoilers. The show is filmed in Georgia and entered a new chapter last Sunday. Andrew Lincoln made his exit from The Walking Dead, but AMC is not yet finished telling the story of Rick Grimes. Producers plan to write and produce spinoffs that star Lincoln. Now, the characters are only one part of the show's success. The props also make up a huge part. Kalina Buller is a friend of On Second Thought and host of The Credits. That is a new podcast from GPB that debuts today. And here's just a taste. Kalina's speaking here with The Walking Dead props assistant Danny Gorbachev for The Credits. He got his start in the film industry in a small production company in North Carolina.
When North Carolina voted away all the tax incentives, we were looking for someplace else to go. Being from the Atlanta area seemed like a good fit. It was an art PA for about 3 years and really enjoyed it, learned a whole lot, and just recently, a couple months ago, decided to make the leap and join the union and get into props, which is kind of where I always wanted to be. So I've liked to be hands-on, and I'm also very detail-oriented and sort of keeping track of, you know, my brain just sort of works well in that fashion, or kind of clocking where things were, you know, little kind of what could be considered nitpicky things, but for that world are very important, you know, for the sake of continuity and so on. You don't want it to stick out. In a way, if it's hardly noticed, it's kind of a good thing because it means, you know, it looked as it should have. And just recently I've been day playing on The Walking Dead. For a props person, it's been a dream, you know, because everybody's got their knives and their guns and we're covering things in blood. And, you know, there's a whole lot of background that also need all their props and, you know, their weapons or bows or what have you, you know, axes, all these little different things. That Rick Grimes Magnum, that's pretty iconic, and the Lucille, the barbed wire bloody bat. It's a big show for the props department, which is, you know, it's a lot of fun for me to be in that environment because I can learn a lot while I'm there. I'm still, you know, very early on in you know, my career as a props assistant, so for me there's still lots to learn, and that's been really great. And I can't get over seeing zombies, like, smoking cigarettes at, you know, it's lunchtime, and so there's just something very fun about that, you know, having a smoke. Working with a really on-point, super tight-knit group like they have over at The Walking Dead has been a dream, and that's really been great, too, just sort of seeing people, you know, at their A-game and kind of learning from those folks has been great. For me, too, nothing's too specific. I would say I'm a big history nerd, so a big period piece also as a props person, I would really be into that. To keep things in perspective, I mean, I really do feel lucky. I feel like we're all very lucky to get to do what we do.
Danny Gorbachev, props assistant for The Walking Dead, speaking with Kalina Buller, host of The Credits, and she is here in the studio with us to give the rundown on The Walking Dead and other productions here in Georgia. First, Kalina, congratulations.
Thank you so much, and good morning.
So great to hear that. So, just curious, that little bell that went off, is that like something that happens on a film set,
bell? Right.
It's like calling you to school?
Essentially, it's a warning. So it's letting people know, hey, we are rolling or getting ready to roll. And it's usually accompanied with a blinking red light. And you see that a lot on sound stages when people are filming, because there's lots of commotion going on behind the scenes. And we want to hold all work, as we say, when that bell goes off and that light starts blinking. So
great to get a little insight on that. And great to hear your interview from the set of The Walking Dead. And we know characters take on different roles and identities in productions, but I guess props are also playing their own kind of role. I mean, think of Rosebud.
Yeah.
And the whole Chekhov thing, that if the gun goes off in the third act, it's, or gun is pictured in the third act. It's going to go off by the end of the play.
Right.
So how do they make sure these things get seen?
I think that each character, a prop is an extension of your character. So there is an entire department dedicated to it, because some of these characters have, you know, these practical items that they use, that whether they're weapons or if there is a person who is a chef and they have a particular, mm-hmm. you know, item that they use, to like a spatula or a butcher's knife or something, or a cleaver if you're
in The Walking Dead.
You're right, in The Walking Dead. And these items, by extension, they become iconic. And so you have to have people that are doing the research, of course, that make sure that these items are not just specific to the character, but also specific to the time.
Mm-hmm. Feel accurate.
Exactly.
Like you said, the nitpicky things, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and Danny touched on that when we talked to him on the set. And he was just in awe as he got to see these items that they've already become iconic. But in the beginning, first season, unless you were a fan of the graphic novel, you didn't necessarily know about, Rick and his particular props or Michonne and her katana, you know, things like that. So it was, I'm sure it was an amazing experience for him just getting started. And I know for a lot of people, you know, it's just something that it's almost like akin to how, like a wand for a fairy or something like that. You just, if you see a fairy or a witch or something like that, you have to have a wand somewhere nearby.
Yeah.
It's just, it goes with the character.
Right. And I imagine for the actor, they maybe become it, you know, become
exactly.
the part when they hold on to this bat or whatever.
Exactly.
Well, you describe the credits as your love letter to the hardworking people alongside you in the industry. So what are some of the other stories that we can expect from the credits?
We are going to hear some great stories. One in particular that I loved was the story that I told or got to tell for a friend of mine named Stephanie Morales. She does craft services. And what craft services is, essentially, is the people that walk around with the snack trays on set, and they make sure that everybody is satiated and feels, you know, full, and they're able to focus on the job, because no one wants to necessarily have a growling stomach or a tummy that's empty when they're trying to lift, you know, all kinds of equipment.
I would be so much more effective if I didn't have to think about making dinner.
And we also found out, talking to her, that it's more than just bringing out the snacks. She's essentially somebody that you can break with. Mm. You can go to her truck, sit down, she'll hand you a bowl of something delicious, or, you know, you can crack open a bag of chips or something, and she will talk to you and clear your head so you can get back out there and do the job you were paid to do.
You also spoke with Joel Ray Ishman and Quaylen Bradley. Both are stand-in actors there on FX's Atlanta.
That's right.
Here's just a little preview of that episode.
I found that stand-in work, not only is it stable for you, like financially, so you have,
right.
As an artist, it's important to have that foundation. It's also such a great learning experience. You learn so much that you would never learn from, you know, a class. Coming from theater, you learn so many different types of methods of acting. However, when you are on film and TV, those methods don't translate.
Kalina, do you find that, can you tell if somebody's been a theater-trained actor compared to a sort of film and TV actor?
There's an adage out there that says if you are maybe a stand-up comedian, you can easily transition to being an actor, but actors can't necessarily become comedians. And I think there's something that has something to do with being able to stand up and speak publicly.
Yeah.
And when you are a screen actor exclusively, sometimes that, you know, that's a little bit more difficult, because you can have a little bit more of an intimate relationship with the camera than you can with a general audience that's, you know, just wide and huge and big. And then there's something about projection and being able to gesture with arms and hands, you know. But at the end of the day, everybody needs specific training. And I think stand-ins in particular, they have to not only be trained in the craft of acting, they kind of have to know the science behind filmmaking. They need to know that, oh, if I stand X amount of feet away from this camera, this angle will look this way, because these are the questions that the director and the assistant director are asking of them. You know, so they're standing in so they can get the technical aspects together for the actors that will come in and actually do the roles. So the stand-in actors are on another league entirely. And that was something I was not prepared for. As someone who's done this for about 14 years, I had no idea.
Yeah.
So, yes.
That's a surprise to me. Did they have to learn the scripts? Did they have to stand there all day? I mean, they're working all day alongside
they
all
are
the actors?
All day, yes. And they're not just with the actors, but they're part of the crew. And that's what I think people don't understand, too, about stand-in actors is, yes, they are acting in a way, but they're really the crew members. They are the people that are making the movie magic happen. And you may not see them necessarily on screen, but you feel the work that they did, because the actors have perfect, you know, they're standing just where they need to stand, and they are moving just where they need to move in relation to the camera and in relation to the characters, the other characters they're working with, and the set and everything. So yeah, it's very technical, much more technical than I was prepared for.
Well, we're getting a real glimpse of that with Kalina Buller. She's host of the Credits podcast and talking about what's next for The Walking Dead, among other things, and talk about her new podcast that is launching today on GPB. But while we have you here, we have to ask you, what's filming in Georgia? One recent entertainment announcement had fans in a little bit of shock. Tyler Perry says his next Madea film will be his last. Here is a clip from the most recent A Madea Family Funeral.
The Bible say, yea, though she walked in the valley with the shadow of Little Red Riding Hood and the three bears, she feared no evil because the three little pigs was not around.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. She's just iconic. She will be missed.
Will she be missed? I mean, has she run out of gas? I mean, why do you think Tyler Perry is doing this?
I'm not sure his reasons for doing it, but I think all good things essentially have to come to an end. Many of us out here in the audience, we had a love-hate relationship with Madea. Some of us were really, really into her. We said, oh, yes, that reminds me of the women in my family, particularly the older women in my family. Some of us were like, oh, no, this is some kind of like minstrel caricature. This is not going to work. And we can come up from this. And, you know, there was arguments on both sides. But you cannot deny the iconic nature of this character and what he has brought to the screen. And oh my gosh, what my Halloween, what's it going to be like without Madea? What is my Christmas going to be like without Madea? Even though I personally am not a fan of the characters per se, it just, you know, you knew a Madea movie was coming out, you know, at least once or twice a year. It became a staple. So, yeah, she'll be missed.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, in the Madea movies, a man plays a woman. Mm-hmm. And the first one was made in 2005. But since then, understanding, respect for the transgender community has come a long way.
Absolutely.
I wonder if that evolution in thinking is part of what's bringing this franchise to a close.
I'm sure. I think audiences, as we have gone on from the days of the Nickelodeon, I mean, we are becoming smarter viewers, right? And so we want to see more authenticity. And I think there can be still a place for people playing characters that aren't necessarily their gender. But I think going forward, characters like Madea are going to start, they may start falling off. I think we'll see them, you know, throughout film and television as we keep going. But it's not going to be very prominent like it was, I think.
Just Mercy is being filmed in Atlanta, starring Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Foxx, and Brie Larson. It's a biopic of the late work of Bryan Stevenson. Now, this is the man who initiated the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery.
That's right.
Honoring lynching victims, and has also worked on a number of cases helping to exonerate people falsely accused. Here he is speaking with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! About mass incarceration.
We now live in an era of mass incarceration where we intimidate and threaten and harass and menace people of color. And everybody feels it. And so we shouldn't be surprised if you don't get justice. What we should do is start talking about truth.
That's a pretty, let's say, heated or almost a flashpoint contemporary political issue right now. Is it a challenge for turning Hollywood star power on issues like this?
Not anymore. Yeah. It used to be, maybe, but not anymore. I think like I said, when I said earlier, the audience is getting a little smarter, we're also getting a lot more cognizant that we're all human, including our celebrities that we love so much. And we also want to know what their political views are. And so it's almost expected, as we can see from this past election cycle in the midterms, people got upset that Beyonce didn't come out for Beto O'Rourke because, you know, earlier instead of the day before. So I think that with celebrities starting to do more of these biopics, it's just going to be par for the course at this point. We have a lot of major issues in our country at the moment, and mass incarceration is one of them. Being falsely accused and spending time in jail or prison falsely is a huge problem, particularly in the Black community. And so Bryan Stevenson's story is outstanding. And if anybody like me had a chance to read his book, Just Mercy, I'm very excited for this film. I'm excited for what Michael B. Jordan's trying to do as a producer. And I'm excited for that cast. You know, it's just going to be amazing. I can't say it enough. I'm very excited about it.
Well, not entirely dissimilar, trailer for Best of Enemies just released. This is coming out in 2019. Taraji P. Henson and Sam Rockwell in the new movie, based on another true story book, The Best of Enemies. Story here about local KKK, somebody who, an unlikely friendship, let's put it that way.
Yes.
So do you think we're going to see, have to wrap in just a second,
of course,
but more of those, you know, things that adults can handle?
Right. We can handle things where there's redemption at the end. Because even though in Best of Enemies, from the trailer and from the book, it's a story of an unlikely friendship between a civil rights activist and a Ku Klux Klan leader in Durham, North Carolina, you got to think about that we can all still come together at the end to do what's right. And I think that's a message of hope. And I, for one, worked on that film. So this is going to be great.
Congratulations. And a message of hope indeed. Kalina Buller, she's host of GPB's The Credits Podcast, which you can start listening to today.
Absolutely.
And that is it. We're so glad to have you with us on this Friday. Have a beautiful weekend. I'm Virginia Prescott. From me and all the crew here at On Second Thoughts, thanks so much.